Thank you. Thank you, ladies and gentlemen, committee members, office council officers. We're here today for the planning committee meeting of the 29th of October 2024. Just give a general welcome to who we are. So I'll be the chairman of this meeting, Councillor Arshad Afsar. To my right, I've got planning officer Barbara Toy, Lisa Bird, trainee Paige Stanley, Tom Deary, head of services. To my left, I've got legal representative Penelope James, democratic officer Daniel Corquett, and trainee Emily Thomas. If I could just ask committee members to please press the mic and introduce yourselves. Thank you.
Thank you. Councillor Walter.
Councillor Michael Slater.
Good afternoon, Councillor Mick Huckabee.
Good afternoon, Councillor Alison Legg.
Councillor Bev.
Councillor Colin Whittaker.
Councillor Stanley.
Thank you. Before we move into the agenda of today's meeting, we'll just start with some housekeeping rules. A reminder, if I could ask everybody to switch off their mobile phones, please, or put them to silent. If we have a fire alarm raised, it will be a live call if we can proceed back out onto the main car park where we came in from. A polite notice for members of the public not to call out when individuals are speaking. Obviously, it will prevent anyone else hearing the debate. Each member present here for speaking will be allowed 3 minutes, and there will be a clock present to count down the 3 minutes. Thank you, and we'll move on to the agenda items for today. So, agenda item number one, do we have any apologies for absence?
Thank you, Chair. We have an apology from Councillor Simon Slater.
Thank you. Moving on to agenda item number two. Do we have any member who wishes to declare any interest?
Yes, Chair. I'd like to declare interest, please. Conflict of interest for item 6.1. Yes, the agent is known to me.
Thank you for that, Councillor Holton. So when we move on to that agenda items for 6.1, we'll ask you to leave the room and then we'll call you back in once the item's been debated and voted on. Thank you. Agenda item number three. Would members please accept the minutes from the last meeting held on the 28th of August 2024? Thank you, Councillor Whittaker, proposer. Councillor Jones, seconded. Can I see a show of hands, all those in favour, please? Any abstentions? Any against? Thank you. Moving on to agenda item number four. Do we have any urgent business to be brought to the committee's attention? No urgent business. We'll move on to agenda item number five. So this is to take nominations for the vacant post of vice chairman for the ensuing year. I've received one indication from Councillor Huckabee to stand for vice chair. Do I see any other nominations? No other nominations. So, Councillor, we're voting for Councillor Huckabee for for Vice Chair. Can I see a show of hands, all those in favour, please? Thank you, that's unanimous. So, congratulations, Councillor Huckabee. Moving on to agenda item number 6, the applications for planning permission. So the first application we've got on today's list, planning application P2023-00852. This is for the retention of use as a cafe Class E and for the consumption of food / beverages on the premises and to allow for the sale of hot food for takeaway. Sue Generous, 1D, the address, site address, 1D Ralston Road, Burton-on-Trent, Staffordshire, DE130JT. I'll now pass over to the planning officer to present the case. Thank you.
Good afternoon. As the Chair has just said, this is for planning application 2023-00852. So the proposal is for retention of the use of the cafe, which is use Class E, and the consumption of food / beverages on the premises, and to allow for the sale of hot food for takeaway, which is a sui generis use. The takeaway use is ancillary to the main use as a cafe, with the takeaway element being approximately 30% of the business currently. The use did commence in July 2021. The cafe use as Class E is the same as the previous retail use, so no planning consent is required for the cafe use on its own. Consent is only required for the takeaway element of the use. The cafe use is for 30 covers with opening hours of 8 a.m. to 2 p.m. Monday to Friday, 9 to 1 on a Saturday, 9 to 12 Sundays and bank holidays. There is a condition attached to recommended on the report to restrict these hours of opening. There's also a condition that would allow 7 evening events throughout the year, with a condition that requires the details of those events to be notified to the local authorities so that they can be monitored. There's been no physical alterations to the building except for a small vent above the kitchen window. Moving on, the site is outlined in black. The building is that area there. There is a privately owned access drive that runs through here into this car park area to the rear of the residential properties that run round the corner from from Ralston Road, Horninglow Road North, and into Farm Road. So this is a private access with a footpath at the side of it, which you'll see in some photographs and members saw this morning, that is owned by Midland Heart, who own and operate the residential properties. This access is into their rear car parking area. Just to point out a few things within the area, the church opposite, that is a non-designated heritage asset identified in the neighbourhood plan. The former pub on the corner here, that is now a community building. And on the opposite side of the road is a local centre with some shops and 2 takeaway premises. The building is a detached building that sits completely separately from the residential development. This is just showing the site in slightly wider context. The green is the closest listed building to the property, not seen in any of the same views. Aerial photograph that clearly shows the residential parking area and the rear of those properties that uses this access area. This identifies the local centre within the local plan, which is the block of retail units that's on the corner of Horninglow Road North and Dover Road. Sorry, not quite sure what that feedback was there. And then this identifies the local centre that's within the Horninglow and Eaton neighbourhood plan. This, as well as including the shops, some commercial premises within Dover Road, also includes the community building on the corner and the church premises. The application site is here and sits just outside of that local centre. So the block plan identifies the building here and two parking spaces set to the rear of the building. This building and the two parking spaces is in separate ownership to the access and the parking area and the residential development. The two parking spaces are allocated to 1D, the application premises. The access gates into the residential car park have been moved throughout the course of the application from approximately here to across here on an angle so that there is appropriate access into these two parking spaces that do not form part of the residential car park. So the proposed internal layout and site plan, there's been no external alterations to the building apart from one small vent. The internal area remains the same. So the cafe area here, the kitchen and food prep area, store and WC. There's an additional access further along the building, which is for emergency access and for staff. And the main public access is on the corner of the building closest to the public footpath. The number of covers within the cafe is 30. So elevation of the building remains as it was previously, apart from this very small vent that has been put in above the kitchen window. Everything else remains as previous, with the public access to the cafe in at the closest to the public footpath. Moving on to some photographs, you'll see some yellow bollards here that have been installed along the edge of the pathway. These have been installed by Midland Heart to prevent vehicles from parking partly on the pavement area and blocking pedestrian access and vehicle access into the residential development. You'll note that there is two signboards, one on the side, one on the front elevation facing onto Ralston Road. These replace previous boards of the same size, and there is no requirement for any advertisement consent for those signs. It's also noted that there is double yellow lines both sides of Ralston Road within the vicinity of the application, and that two of the residential units, part of the Midland Heart development, are these two properties here, with the access drive running between the residential and the cafe. Right. So some further photos. That's the two parking spaces that sits to the rear of the building. The access gates that have been moved to the angled section so that there is free use of the two parking spaces for the cafe use. And all of this is privately owned by Midland Heart. The position of the bin in this position just beyond the other access door allows for pedestrian access between the bollards and the bin. This is the vent for the kitchen extraction equipment, and that's just a larger scale version of that. So it is barely visible, and that is the only external alteration to the property. This is a photograph that was submitted with the comment, with the objection that was received from the parish council. This was taken some time ago, prior to the installation of the bollards, which were installed to prevent this unauthorised parking. The car park access gates have since been moved. They're, you can just see they're positioned at the end of the straight bit, I would say, of the access road. And there's some outside seating here. That has since been removed from the proposals. So the photographs you've seen previously show the current situation. This is prior to the amendments that have been made. So, going through the committee report, Environmental Health have raised no objections relating to ground contamination or noise. The ventilation system and compliance with food hygiene are separate legislation. Food safety informative requested in the original response is no longer required because has been complied with. The Highway Authority have raised no objections, subject to a condition to restrict the hours of operation. There was no objection to the psychic suppers proposed 7 nights throughout the year. So, moving on, the Horninglow and Eton Parish Council have raised objections based on objections from local residents. The neighbourhood's plan is very clear on parking. The proposed extension reduces the parking spaces from 2 to 0. These comments were made on the original submission rather than on the amended scheme. And on this site, it's already an issue with cars blocking the entranceway by those that require access. Residents have also reported having their vehicles blocked in. Surrounding streets are all double yellow lined and there is no other sufficient parking. The location is close to a very busy junction with hundreds and stroke thousands of school children walking and travelling this route to the many schools. Any additional parking pressure in the area will affect visibility and increases the chance of accidents. The parking issue to be confirmed and a robust parking plan for both staff and visitors to be produced before any consideration is made. The photo that I showed you previously was provided showing cars parked directly outside the building and in front of the access gates, but as explained, the bollards are now in place to prevent this parking. No further comments have been received from the parish during the further reconsultation periods. In terms of neighbour comments, there were 16 objections received on the original consultation, together with the comments from the parish council. 9 objections received in relation to the reconsultation on amended plan, and 3 objections received following the second reconsultation. A large number of letters have been received from one objector that have continued to be received outside of the consultation periods. The objections raised are detailed in full in the main report, but refer to the principle of the development, impact on visual amenity, impact on residential amenity, highway impacts, ecology, drainage, waste storage and collection, impacts on heritage assets, contamination, validation and plans, extraction system, rights of access, the planning history of the site, case law relating to cafe uses, and a number of non-planning issues. Policies referred to are the MPPF, East Staff's local plan, Horninglow and Eton neighbourhood plan, East Staff's design guide, and the parking standards SPD. Moving on to the principle of the development. The cafe use falls within the existing use class E. Only the ancillary takeaway use requires planning consent. The site sits in a sustainable location, close to the local centre, and serves the local community. The principle of the use is therefore considered appropriate. There are no material changes to the building, only a very small vent for the kitchen extraction, situated above the kitchen window. It is therefore considered that the development would have no adverse impact on visual amenity. Moving on to residential amenity, It's considered that the cafe stroke takeaway use would not generate significantly different levels of footfall over that of the previous retail use to cause demonstrable harm to the amenities of the surrounding residential occupiers, given the hours of operation and the size of the building. Environmental Health have raised no objection in terms of noise and are satisfied with the kitchen extraction equipment and food safety. Moving on to highways, it is recognised that there is a shortfall in car parking for the use, but given the sustainable location adjacent to a local centre, the extent of residential and commercial premises in close proximity, and no objections raised by the Highway Authority, it is not considered that a reason for refusal on parking stroke highway safety could be sustained, given that the use of the premises as a cafe can be carried out without the need for any planning permission. It is noted that there are double yellow lines on both sides of Ralston Road and that the new bollards on the footway in the private access prevent parking within the access drive and the blocking of the private pavement area. Historic environment. Given the separation distance and the lack of any external changes to the premises, it is considered that the use would have no impact on the setting of any listed building or the non-designated heritage asset that sits opposite the site. Waste. The siting of the waste bin is considered acceptable, subject to a condition relating to an appropriate bin screen. It has been confirmed that the waste collection is undertaken by a private company and cardboard is collected by ESBC. Bin collection within and from the private access drive is a matter between the operator of the cafe and Midland Heart as the owner of the land. In terms of contamination, there are no contamination issues relating to the change of use of the building. Ecology, there are no ecological issues relating to the change of use. And responses to neighbour objections, the main report responds to all the objections made, a number of which are not planning related. In conclusion, the proposals comply with the local plan, Horninglow and Eaton neighbourhood plan, the design guide and the national planning policy framework. We've worked closely with the applicant throughout the development to ensure a satisfactory outcome, and a number of amended plans and details have been submitted, which all surrounding residents have been notified of. So the recommendation is to approve with conditions as per the report.
Thank you for that report. Right, we have a number of speakers on this item, so if I could ask the first person to come forward, which will be Joseph Robert Shaw. If you could come forward when you're ready, if you press the mic, you'll get 3 minutes from the time you're.
Members of the committee, the LPA's recommendations appears to be erroneously made. Failure to provide specific or special circumstances justifying the deviation from the LPA's supplementary planning document parking standards. The applicant did not provide a travel plan nor a transport assessment despite the threshold of 30 vehicles per hour trip generation being triggered. The recent 2024 local transport data from the highways contradicts the LPA's claims for a sustainable public transport location. In the immediate vicinity, bus infrastructure is rated poor for public access, runs less than 60% of the time on time, has seen a drop in patronage, and cycling in Burton is recorded as low as 5 cycling trips per annum. Neither the LPA or the applicant have provided substantive evidence to support a 78% reduction in parking standards. Didn't demonstrate any attempt to address the evidence showing a failure to meet safe stopping distance and visibility displays at the junction to the shared access, a critical material planning consideration for public and highway safety. The intensification of the use and departure from past planning judgment on this site makes this a common sense material consideration irrelevant of the access not being physically altered. many case law precedents would count for this. Incorrect dismissal of inadequate ventilation as a non-material planning consideration, the NPPS policies on noise and air pollution would be a start to demonstrate the need for this to be a clear material consideration in planning. Incorrect dismissal of assessment under the Brewery Building Conservation Supplementary Planning Document and National Planning Policy Framework policies for protecting non-designated heritage assets, despite noting the site as a former Marston Brewery site. The last known legal use for the site is a newsagent's, which is under the use class F.2. Like the cafe, the former showroom and hair salon did not seek appropriate planning permission, nor did they remain for consecutive 10 years to be lawfully deemed a use under the 10-year rule. The class F.2 change to a class E cafe requires full planning permission. The LPA's dismissal of need to comply with waste collection SPD is wholly erroneous. The supplementary planning document is applicable to all applications, irrespective of whether it is under private collection or not. Conditions, or the recommended conditions, are contradictory. One limits the use to a cafe and a hot food takeaway, while another allows a private event, which the applicant hasn't applied for in their description of work or their application form. And then the operating hours are similarly conflicting, creating enforcement challenges. Lastly, factual inconsistencies in the LPA's recommendation incorrectly place the site within a local centre and a main town, yet the site is outside the local centre 4 and is in a Tier 3 village. In conclusion, this application is flawed in terms of ventilation, waste management, parking, visibility displays, air and noise pollution and protection of a heritage asset. I urge you to reject it on the community's best interest. Due to the 3-minute time limit, this was a brief synopsis. The Chair has the right to seek clarification and evidence on any points raised, and I am happy to do so. Thank you. Also, since I've got 30 seconds left, there were previous applications for advertisement on this site. Those were approved, but with conditions that they were only there for 5 years, so just replacing them now for the signs that are currently there are not lawful. I did continue to provide evidence after the consultation period, but that's because the applicant kept changing drawings. The latest drawings were submitted on the 10th of this month and were sent out to reconsultation, despite the building being made 10% larger than previously depicted on plans. Thank you.
Thank you. If you can just push the button back and sit back where you was. Thank you. Great. Thank you. If I can have the second speaker, Paul Felton, please, to come forward. Again, 3 minutes from the time you start speaking.
Okay. For me, the CAF has become a very important part of the community where I moved to the area not long after COVID, and I've changed. I now work at home 5 days a week, so it's been very positive for my own mental health that very often I go to the CAF. It's the only time I see anyone else or speak to anyone else during the day, apart from my wife. I go to the CAF at 8:30 most mornings, because the CAF opens at 8:30 now, not 8 o'clock. Between 8:30 and 9 o'clock, we get a very regular group of people that come in. And like myself, there's 3 or 4 elderly guys that come in who I would imagine live on their own. And to them, it's an important part of their day. They come in, we have a chat, and you know, it must be good for their mental health as well. And obviously, it's important to them. Now, I always walk to the CAF, and between the hours of 8:30 and 9 o'clock, it's very quiet. There's never very many people there. And there is only one guy that comes in his car and parks in one of the spaces. So I can't really see that as being an issue. And also, there's the employment opportunities. I've seen a lot of young people that have come there, 16, 17, with it being their first job, they've come in as naive young people, worked in the CAF, and it's been great to see the young people become adults, grow up, and a lot of them have moved on to better things. A lot of them have secured apprenticeships. There's looked like youngsters that come in that have been at college and have gone on to university and come back and have now secured degrees. So to me, it is a very important part of the community, and it would be very sad to see it close for one or two slight issues with parking. But I wouldn't imagine that was too serious, to be honest. And I don't need the whole 3 minutes to say what I wanted to say, but for me, it is very important for my own mental health that it's the one time of the day that I go out and I get a chance to see other people. Very often on a Monday to Friday, if I'm working at home, I get to see like sort of the wife, and it's a good to get a break from her for a couple of minutes.
Thank you. If you've finished, if you just press your mark. Thank you. Can I have the third speaker, please, Kay Lewis, to come forward? 3 minutes again from the point you start speaking.
Firstly, I'd like to clarify that there is no proposed extension that would compromise the two existing parking spaces. They will remain as they are. Regarding the issue of early morning traffic and the footfall of school children, our trade is at its slowest between the hours of 8:30 and 9:30 a.m. due to our customers preferring to wait until after rush hour to visit. Our busiest period is actually between 10 and 11:30 a.m. when the traffic flow has greatly reduced. We have had zero incidents, accidents or near misses involving customer vehicles since opening. Our customers and delivery drivers are aware we only provide two parking spaces, and they have not reported any issues with finding alternative parking either along Rolston Road past the double yellow lines, in the car park behind the row of shops on Dover Road, or in the adjacent street on Field Rise. A large proportion of our customers, of course, prefer to walk. Furthermore, to deter anyone parking in the residence car park to the rear of the premises, there is clear private parking signage displayed, a lockable gate for residents to use at their discretion, and bollards on the pavement to prevent any obstruction to residents' access. Our cafe opening hours are limited and reasonable in regards to residential amenity, and any noise is contained within the premises. The exterior is kept clean and tidy, and there has been no evidence of increased pests or issues raised by the environmental health officer. Our extraction system and ventilation is also EHO approved. East Staffordshire Borough Council Waste Disposal visit the site to empty Midland Heart residence bins and not the cafes. They only take any excess cardboard. We use Wilshire's Waste Management, who have their own recycling scheme, and neither them nor ESBC have ever raised any concerns around the access for their vehicles. Unfortunately, our wicker bin surround has been stolen, and I'm looking for a more permanent solution to this. It has been very disheartening to read some of the objections, as I have had no communication from representatives from East Staffordshire Council or Midland Heart to discuss and resolve any of the issues raised. Until reading the report, I was unaware of many of them. The cafe trade is realistic, manageable, and sustainable. We are a local employer. However, should the takeaway element be removed, it will inevitably lead to job losses. I am very proud of the Greenhouse Cafe and what we have achieved there. We are not only a business, we provide company, advice, help and guidance to many of our customers. We are a community cafe. Thank you.
Thank you for that, and we'll move over to debate, and I'll open the floor up to the committee members. Councillor Jones indicated.
Thank you, Chair. Just a couple of questions for planning officers. If we were to refuse this application, the cafe would still operate as it is. It just would not be allowed to have the takeaway. Is that right?
That's correct. Because
all the suggestions of all the things that were wrong with it being there already do not apply, or they've got permission or whatever, rather than I'm sorry, but there was one of the objectors that seemed to have a catalogue of things that you'd got wrong that I was a bit surprised about.
The cafe use is within the same use class as the previous retail use class E. Therefore, it doesn't require any consent. It is only the sui generis takeaway element that requires planning consent.
And has that been operating for a little while now, that takeaway part of the business?
As far as I'm aware, yes. The use of the cafe certainly started in July 2021. I'm unaware how long the takeaway element has been in operation.
And has the council had any complaints about any of the issues relating to the cafe, and parking, whatever else? Has there been any issues reported to environmental?
The use of the cafe was reported to enforcement officers, and that's how we got the planning application. So there was issues raised about the use originally. Whether there's been complaints to environmental health, the officers from environmental may be able to clarify that. But we've only had the objections that are detailed in the report are the ones that have been received as a direct result of consultation on the application at the various different points where we've had amendments.
Okay. And finally, the Highways Department, Staffordshire County Council, they had no comments, is that correct?
No objections, subject to a condition relating to the opening hours.
Tom, did you want to come in?
Thank you, Chair. Just on the complaints point, Councillor Jones, I understand that two complaints were received through the Council's corporate complaints process, one relating to the treatment of the planning application and one relating to environmental health. Neither were upheld.
So not actually about the cafe itself, more about our processes. Is that what you're saying?
Not that I'm aware of, but I would defer to environmental health colleagues on the environmental health element.
Okay, thank you.
We've not received any food complaints for the premises, and you've not received any noise complaints.
Councillor Whittaker.
Yeah, looking at it, a lot of the issues have been addressed or mediated against with the bollards and things. We all went there this morning, and it was very busy. It's obviously fulfilling the good community use. I can't really say if there's no objection from the highways, how we could uphold any problem, because if there's no problem at that junction, it's operating as normal, and if there's no issues regarding the environmental running of the cafe and the takeaway, which obviously that will be monitored as it goes forward, but they've operated since 2021 and served the community well by all sounds things, and I think we should encourage these small businesses to help the community and everybody's well-being and the area. So I can't see a problem with this at all.
Do I have any indication of any other speakers? Councillor George.
Just to note that there are going to be 7 psychic events of an evening. I guess they're going to be monitored. Is that something new or that's something that's been previously run? I believe they have been run previously, and there is a condition recommended that the private events, we be notified about those so that we can monitor how many there are through the year.
Thank you. Do we have any other speakers on this item? No further speakers. So we've had a good presentation. We've listened to the objectors and the supporters' comments. Obviously, we've had a debate on the item. So moving forward, do I have an indication of somebody to take the application forward? Councillor George, I'll count you in as taking it forward, and seconded by Councillor Whittaker. So moving forward, for a show of hands, all those in favour? Thank you. That's unanimous. So this application is granted. If anybody would like to leave the room, if you can do now, please, before we move on to the next part. Thank you, members. We'll move on to the planning application number two. This is two applications, but the presentation will be done as one and it will be voted separately. So the first application number is P2022-01138, and that is for the outline application for up to 90 dwellings with all matters reserved, and planning application P2022-01139, that is for the outline application for up to 100 dwellings with all matters reserved. Site address is Upper Outwoods Farm, Beam Hill Road, Burton-on-Trent, DE13 9QW, and I'll pass over to the planning officer to present the case.
Thank you, Chair. Good afternoon. As the Chair stated, the applications are both in outline, one for up to 90 dwellings and one for up to 100 dwellings with all matters reserved. The outline for the wider site was approved in 2013, which, as members saw this morning, is currently under construction. Members can see the application for the 90 dwellings on this slide here, showing the site edged in black. The red edge shown around Beam Hill Road and partly down Outwoods Lane is the settlement boundary. It is in part of a sustainable urban extension of the wider site. Beam Hill Road is to the north of the site. Outwoods Lane runs in this direction here to the west. To the south is Field Lane, which continues along here. And this is Tutbury Road. Kittling Greaves Lane also comes partly into the site here, but that doesn't continue any further. This slide just indicates the application for 90 dwellings within the wider SUE, which is hatched in a blue line. So that's a sustainable urban extension. And this slide shows the application site in context of the other permissions at the site. The wider pink area is the previously approved outline. That's a previously approved outline site. The land that's shown in blue on this slide is currently under development by Blaws, and the wider site is being developed by Persimmon Homes. The accesses are to the north along Beam Hill Road, so this access here is currently in use for the dwellings that are currently occupied and for construction purposes, and the access here is the one that members stood on this morning and is currently only in use for construction vehicles at the moment but would serve the wider site. The site has got approval for the wider site for residential purposes, and the local centre and school are proposed in this area here. So this slide shows the application boundary for up to 100 dwellings edged in black, with the settlement boundary again edged in red. This indicates the sustainable urban extension and the position of the site for 100 dwellings within that. And again, this one shows the site in context with the wider development of the site for 950 houses. This is the southern portion, the southern element for 100 dwellings. So this indicates both applications together, the northern portion being for up to 90 dwellings and the southern portion being for up to 100 dwellings. As I stated before, the site has been split between two developers, so Blaw Homes are dealing with the areas edged in blue, and the remainder of the site is being dealt with by Persimmon Homes. This is the approved phasing plan for the wider site. So the original 2013 permission for 950 dwellings is shown within the coloured areas on this plan. So the red, the blue, the pink and the yellow areas. The reserve matters submitted previously provide those dwellings, all 950 dwellings, to the northern and eastern part of the site. To date, no applications have been made for the school or local centre. The timescale for the submission of reserve matters in relation to the original 2013 outline permission expired in August 2021. Full planning applications would now be required for the school and the local centre. The planning application for the school, which would be in this area here, would need to go to Staffordshire County Council for determination. It is understood that the school land is being prepared for transfer to county and the developer has indicated that they expect delivery by 2026. There is no provision within the original section 106 for the site for the local centre. However, the developer has assured us that an application for this will be made to us next year for delivery by 2026. That's in this area shown here. And I have received an email today from the applicants stating that an offer by a potential end user has been received in respect of the local centre. I would also point out that the area of land here is within a blue area which was originally intended under the original outline permission for residential development. However, the 950 houses that were approved under that original outline have been delivered through various reserve matters applications in these areas of the site, so this would not actually impact on any of the landscaping that's shown in the green areas. So this is the approved landscaping for the wider site, with the applications being within this cream coloured area here. The two applications do not result in the loss of any landscaping, being situated in an area that was previously approved for residential development. This plan also indicates the drainage basins, which is shown here and here, and there is a linkage here with a swale or ditch that would be run between the two. There's also play areas proposed in the original scheme, one of which is situated in this area here and the other one in this area of the site here. So there's a few photographs following now. This indicates the view from Field Lane from within the wider site, towards Field Lane. It's a little difficult within the site to get any images because of the lie of the land, but the next photographs do give some different views. So this is the view towards the site from the Beam Hill Road access that we stood in today, which is currently being used by construction traffic at the moment, but will be a main access point for the wider site. These are views from Field Lane, taken approximately from this location adjacent to the end of the houses on the northern side of Field Lane, down towards the development that's currently under construction. And again, this is from another point on Field Lane, just opposite the end of the houses on the southern side of Field Lane, looking down into the site. The applications are both in outline only, and therefore we only have indicative site layouts at this stage. This slide shows the plan for the for application 01138, which is for up to 90 dwellings, and indicates two accesses from the wider SUE site, which are in this area here and into the site here. Similarly, this is an indicative site layout, for the southern portion of the site for up to 100 dwellings. This would have one access point through the northern application that's currently under consideration and an access point from the existing approved estate roads within the site. So in respect of consultation responses, I would just point out that conditions and comments stated within this section of the presentation relate to both applications unless otherwise stated. So consultations, there's been no objection from the Highway Authority, subject to conditions in respect of details of the estate roads and footways, a travel plan and hard surfacing of the highway and parking areas, and a Section 106 obligation in respect of the travel plan monitoring fee. The County Education have no objections subject to a Section 106 financial contribution in respect of primary, secondary and sixth form provision via construction of additional infrastructure or a financial contribution, which members will have seen on the update sheet yesterday. The county archaeologist has no objection to the proposals, and the lead local flood authority have no objections, subject to conditions relating to completion of the drainage structures to the wider site, submission of surface water drainage scheme, and compliance with the overall site strategy for drainage. In terms of ecology, no objection has been received, subject to conditions in relation to the provision of bat and bird boxes, lighting scheme, and compliance with ecological appraisal submitted. The Environment Agency confirmed that they have no comments to make, and Severn Trent Water had no objections, subject to a condition for a scheme of the disposal of foul water for the sites. The National Forest Company have no objection to the proposals and have received no submitted no request for any additional tree planting within the site. No objection has been received from Staffordshire Police or from the newt officer at Nature Space, subject to an informative in respect of great crested newts. The NHS have submitted no objection, subject to a Section 106 financial contribution towards the adaptation, refurbishment or replacement of Carlton Street Surgery and Dove River Practice. In terms of internal consultations, the Environmental Health Team have no objections, subject to conditions relating to schemes of dust mitigation, noise mitigation and contaminated land. Housing strategy of no objection, subject to condition in respect of affordable housing and Section 106 obligations requiring 33% provision on site or financial contribution. The Open Spaces team have no objection and the Waste team have no objection, subject to a financial contribution to provide refuse containers. The Leisure Services team also have no objection, subject to a contribution for provision and maintenance at Shobnal Leisure Complex, Tatenal Hub, Holland Sports Club or Deferra's Dove Campus, so that's in terms of sports provision. Outwards Parish Council have not submitted any comments during the application process and no comments have been received from ward members. In terms of publicity and representations, in respect of P2022-01138 for 90 dwellings, two objections were received. And in respect of P2022-01139 for up to 100 dwellings, four objections were received. These were in relation to principle of the development, with the applications representing a 20% increase over and above the previously approved sustainable urban extension. The visual impact of the proposals in terms of the impact on residents on Field Lane and Beam Hill Road, and the highway impacts of the proposals, including impact upon the Calley Road, Tutbury Road Junction for a scheme of 300 dwellings being refused. That comment was received, but I cannot find an application that was refused for that number of dwellings, so I'm not sure what scheme that relates to. Further comments were made in respect of the application only referring to the impact on the Beam Hill Road and Tutbury Road Harehedge Lane Junction, the strain on existing roads, an additional 190 dwellings exacerbating existing problems, hypothetical software projections being used, the original outline application referring to the wider impact on local roads with suggested traffic management and insufficient consideration of the wider impact on the local roads. Further comments were received in relation to ecology in terms of it being the detrimental impact on surrounding wildlife, and other matters were raised in respect of antisocial behaviour, security risk and housing. The housing proposed could have solar panels fitted. The policies used in the determination of the application are the MPPF, the ESBC local plan, the Outwards Neighbourhood Plan, the East Staffordshire Design Guide, the Parking Standards SPD, the Housing Choice SPD, the Climate Change SPD, the Open Spaces SPD, the Planning Obligations SPD and the Waste Storage and Collection Guidance SPD. In terms of principle of the development, the sites are within the settlement boundary and a sustainable urban extension. The wider site has the benefit of outline planning permission, which approved 950 dwellings and associated infrastructure. The provision of dwellings within the approved SUE is acceptable in principle. In terms of the design and impact on the character of the area, the application is for outline planning permission only, with all matters reserved. Therefore, the layout, design and appearance are not for consideration within this application. The site could physically accommodate 190 dwellings, 90 in the northern area and 100 in the southern area, in a form that would complement the established pattern of development within the wider SUE. In terms of amenity, the indicative site layout indicates that the dwellings can be constructed within the site without compromising the reasonable amenities of future occupiers and can be provided with sufficient private amenity space. In terms of noise, a scheme of noise mitigation is recommended during the construction phase. In respect of pollution and contamination, for both applications, a condition is recommended in respect of contaminated land. An air quality impact assessment has been provided and no mitigation is required. A condition is recommended in respect of dust mitigation during construction and earthworks. In terms of highways matters, the applications are accompanied by a transport assessment and travel plan, along with an illustrative master plan indicating access from the existing estate road to the north off Beam Hill Road. Two accesses for the application for 90 dwellings and one for the application for 100 dwellings, with one of those being through the northern portion of land under consideration. The County Highway Authority have raised no objections subject to conditions and a monitoring fee for the travel plan within the Section 106 agreement. In terms of the historic environment, there are no listed buildings on or adjacent to the site and no conservation areas. The sites are within areas of known archaeology, however the county archaeologist has confirmed that the site has already been subject to a geophysical survey and evaluation trenching which found nothing of archaeological interest and therefore no objections are raised and a condition is not required. The sites are located within flood zone 1, which is at the lowest risk of flooding, and the Environment Agency have no comments to make. Surface water attenuation is proposed to both sites via the use of an offline detention basin known as the lower basin to the northeast within the sustainable urban extension. No objections are raised by the LLFA or Severn Trent subject to drainage conditions. In relation to ecology, an informative is recommended as the sites are within the green impact zone for great crested newts. Indicative landscape strategies have been provided, however, on-site landscaping is reserved for future consideration. BNG is not applicable, however the developer has provided a BNG assessment and metric which has been assessed by the county ecologist and no objection is raised subject to conditions. The National Forest Company have also confirmed that there is no requirement for additional tree planting. No additional open space is proposed within the open space in the is proposed as the open space in the wider SUE already exceeds the requirement by 15.42 hectares. In respect of trees, the applications are accompanied by an arboricultural assessment which confirms that no trees other than those already approved are to be removed from the site. The original outline permission was subject to a 106 agreement which secured the following obligations. General obligations, education sum, affordable housing, a travel plan framework and provision of a bus service, national forest provisions, open space, leaps and landscaping, common amenity area, community liaison group, medical facilities, highways provision and sports provision. A later deed of variation made changes to the education provisions, travel plan framework and provision of a bus service and sports provision. In relation to current Section 106 matters, the original Section 106 didn't secure a primary school within the wider SUE, however no obligation was included to secure the required local centre. The developer has provided a statement in respect of this, confirming that they are actively pursuing its delivery. The following Section 106 obligations are proposed in respect of the two applications currently under consideration. These include affordable housing, education provision, which is as per the update sheet, the healthcare provision towards the adaptation of Carlton Street Surgery and Dove River Practice, the provision of refuse containers, a travel plan monitoring fee and sports provision to secure off-site enhancements at existing facilities. In conclusion, the proposal complies with the local plan, the Outwards Neighbourhood Plan, the East Staff's Design Guide SPD, the parking standards, housing choice, climate change, open spaces, planning obligations and the waste storage and collection guidance SPDs and the National Planning Policy Framework. The local authority has worked proactively with the applicant to secure a development that improves the economic, social and environmental conditions of the area, and the recommendation is to approve both applications with conditions and subject to the Section 106 agreements as per the officer report and update sheet. Thank you.
Thank you. We have one speaker on these items, so if I could ask for Alan Sivita to come forward, please. 3 minutes from when you start. Thank you.
Good afternoon, Chair and Members. My name is Alan Sivita from Pegasus Group. Thank you for the opportunity to speak this afternoon in support of the two applications for residential development made on behalf of the applicant Persimmon Homes. The schemes before you today are for approval of two outline planning applications for 90 and 100 dwellings respectively. Both proposed sites are wholly located within the Beam Hill Sustainable Urban Extension that was granted outline permission in 2013 for the erection of 950 dwellings. These two additional applications allow for further residential within the SUE, a sustainable location for development beyond the 950 dwellings previously allocated in the local plan and secured in the original outline application. Through this additional development, it's important to note that the wider site would still retain an above policy position in relation to open space and ecology. It is rare for a sustainable urban extension to have land available to deliver above a residential capacity contained in a local plan allocation. These two applications provide a further boost to the council's housing land supply, including affordable housing, without the need or requirement for the council to release additional greenfield sites in the borough. The proposed development will deliver a fully policy compliant approach to affordable housing on site at 33%, as well as providing contributions via a Section 106 agreement towards education, healthcare, refuse storage, provision and travel plan monitoring. The committee report also clearly specifies that statutory consultees raise no technical objections that cannot be overcome by way of planning condition. Consultees confirm that the principal development is acceptable and are no heritage, ecological, drainage, flood risk, contamination or highways issues that cannot be finalised or confirmed at the time of submission of detailed reserve matters. As well as there being in principle support for the development, the sites are technically suitable for residential development. Further to these outline applications, the applicant has also set out its approach to the delivery of the local centre and education provision as set out in the original outline. The delivery of these facilities are not a material consideration to the determination of these outline planning applications. Notwithstanding, the additional dwellings proposed have been viewed favourably in the negotiations on the local centre land, and the applicant has received a formal offer to bring forward the local centre based upon the basis of the increased population. In terms of delivery, both the local centre and the education facilities will be subject to separate applications, with construction expected in 2026. It is therefore considered that the existing Beam Hill SUE is a sustainable location for these residential developments, with no principal or technical objections to either development. I would therefore urge members to accept the Office of Recommendation to grant planning permission. Thank you for your time.
Thank you. I have no further speakers on this matter, so I'll open the floor up for debate. Committee members, do I have an indication of anyone wishing to speak first? Councillor Jones.
Thank you, Chair. I've got no objection to this in principle. It is only an outline application, and as such, obviously, there's all the detail to come further along the road. What I do have a concern about is whether what sort of guarantee we have about the school and the local centre. Because obviously this original application, outline application, was granted in 2013. It's now quite some considerable time for you not to have even had an outline application for the school or the local centre. And that is a concern. I know it's not actually part of this application, but is there any way we can condition the sort of the reserve matters to tie in with actually having something a bit more concrete about that provision?
We did investigate whether or not we could tie them into these applications, but it's not possible as they're two standalone outline applications. The school is secured within the Section 106 for the previous outline, under the 2013 outline. The local centre isn't within that, but they would both need two separate full applications at this stage.
Councillor Whittaker.
Yeah, just to make that clear, so we're relying on the goodwill of the developer to bring that centre forward, and if that wasn't there, that could be swallowed up in additional housing, or what is the situation? I can just echo sort of Councillor Jones's fears on that. We've seen this happen in other applications.
Part of the problem is that there is no requirement in the original Section 106 detailing when the local centre should be provided. So it would be unreasonable for us to put any form of a requirement for the provision of the local centre on the two applications that are only for 190 houses. So the original consent does require a local centre to be provided, and there is a land allocation for it, and we have pursued the progress that's been made on providing that. And as Lisa mentioned previously, there has been an email today to confirm that they have had an offer for a provider of a convenience store for the site.
Councillor Slater.
Thank you, Chair. Some technical questions about flooding, please. Can I be reassured that the Flood Authority are convinced that there's no more flooding due to the extra houses that were put on? Because, I mean, in my personal memory, I can remember Kittering Green Lane flooding before any houses were built there at all, and you've now got another 190 houses.
Yeah, the LLFA have been in extensive negotiations with the developers, that's why the applications are obviously 2022 reference numbers. That's what's taken so long to get them before Planning Committee is the negotiations in respect of surface water drainage with the LLFA. There are two basins on the site which they're proposing to discharge through, and the LLFA are satisfied that that's acceptable subject to the conditions recommended in the report.
Lovely, thank you. Sorry, more questions, Kev. Right, so going to conditions then. Conditions, it talks... find my notes, I beg your pardon. So conditions then, condition 17, condition 21 talks about permeable paving for all driveways, I notice. And then later on, 24, it talks about hard standing. So I'm not quite sure which is which. So one minute it says that all driveways will be permeable. And then later on, at condition 24, I think, it talks about... hard standing for parking areas. So that seems it contradicts. Have you found them? Sorry. So condition 21. About halfway down, all surface water shall be contained within surface and water network. Yeah, I'm happy with that. For 100 years plus 40% climate change event, and then later on it says provision of permeable paving for all driveways. And then if you go down to 24, it talks of prior to first occupation, it shall be provided, each dwelling shall be provided with A, hard surface access to highway, and then it talks about hard surface drained parking areas. So these two things don't, in my mind, match, which is why I wonder if the flood people are fully aware, you see.
The LLFA are aware of the percentages of hard surface that are within the application site, so they have taken that into consideration. The two conditions, condition 21 is a condition recommended by the LLFA, and condition 24
yep.
is in respect of hard surfacing for access, so that's more to do with highways maintenance. So they are in respect of separate matters. One's to do with drainage and one's to do with highways. But the driveways for the proposed dwellings could still be permeable.
Right. So the parking areas then are not on the not the driveways. They're a different thing altogether, are they? They're not. I'm still confused.
Parking spaces would be on the driveways to the dwellings. It would be the parking spaces allocated to each dwelling.
So isn't that the same as the driveway? Sorry, it's not working for me. I'm sorry. I am sorry. I wish it was clear, but it's not for me. It looks like you're saying permeable paving for all driveways, and then you're saying parking hard surface parking areas and hard surfaces.
Hard surfacing can still be permeable. It just means that water is able to pass through it.
Okay. Fair enough. Final question. And later on, again, technical question perhaps, it goes on to informatives. And the informatives somewhere, I think I read. We can find it again. So sorry, people. Sorry, I'll go to it. So basically, the informatives suggest that the conditions are in place. Well, I thought conditions were conditions and informatives were informatives. If you got me, I thought the conditions are mandatory and the informatives were sort of optional sort of thing. Not optional, but, you know, recommended, but not conditional. And I don't quite get how you've got the difference there. I'm sorry.
The informatives are to draw the applicant's attention to certain things that they might need to know about. They're not mandatory, like you said. The conditions are the things that they will need to comply with.
Here we go. Informatives, pre-commencement, during development conditions.
That's just a list for the applicant to know which conditions are required to be discharged.
Okay. Right, okay. I'll stop there. Thank you.
Thank you. Tom, did you want to continue?
Thank you, Chair. I just wanted to refer back to the previous question there about hard standing and permeable surfacing. Appreciating that those conditions are identified on this report, I would just remind the committee that this is just an outline application that can be picked up through the reserved matters that follows.
Councillor Legg.
Thank you, Chair. Will the reserve matters be coming back to committee, please?
Yes, I understand that the other reserve matters on the wider site for the 950 dwellings did come back to committee, so we can make sure that the reserve matters are also determined at planning committee.
Does it have to be conditioned, please?
No, we would just make a note that any subsequent reserve matters applications were reported to committee.
Thank you.
Councillor Huckabee.
Thank you, Councillor Ag. On the S106 education, this is split into two applications, effectively. There's two amounts of money there for both primary, secondary and post 16 on each of them. If there is a movement on the first one for 90 odd houses and the second one drags its heels, which is, you know, common practice these days, does the S106 for each, are they interdependent on getting the education facilities in place prior to the exploitation of either of or both of the planning applications?
The applications are both standalone applications, so the section 106 for each one would be independent.
So there is two separate educational facilities being built on the back of these two particular planning applications.
It's a singular school site that was proposed as part of the original outline for the 950 dwellings. The cost is dependent, the cost that's in the section 106 proposed is dependent on the number of places required at those schools. So that's how the county calculate the education contribution. So that's why the two applications are calculated slightly differently, because there's more dwellings on one application than on the other. So if the application for 90 dwellings came forward, they would be expected to pay the contribution as set out in the update sheet for that particular application. It wouldn't then trigger the second application to be paid, because that's completely separate.
So the County Council would have to bear the cost of building a, as I would see it, particular specific buildings for each age group on the basis that application one was approved, and then have to stand out on the rest until that contribution became valid on plan two.
the education department wouldn't necessarily be building new facilities and new schools based on the contributions here. It might be to improve facilities in the existing school to allow the additional capacity. So the only school that is being provided on the site is a primary school. The other contributions would be towards whether it's in education decide that they require a new school. That is for them to decide based on numbers and location, or whether this money goes towards building extensions at existing schools to deal with the capacity. So it's for the education authority how they wish to spend that money. It's not for ESBC to dictate how that money will be spent. It's for the education authority.
No, but it's within my capacity to ask questions. The nearest education facilities to these particular applications then are Deferrers and the schools just off Tutbury Road.
Quite probably, yes, but it's for the education authority to decide whether or not it is appropriate to build a new facility or whether it's appropriate to extend the current ones. They are the county council. We do not have an education authority as part of ESBC, so we are reliant on the county council in that respect.
But these are put in, presumably included in the report, as tempters for passage of the application, and so they have a bearing on my attitude towards the application.
The contributions are the amount that the county council have identified as appropriate to deal with capacity depending on the number of units that are being proposed. That is all that we can say.
Councillor Jones.
I don't know if it would help, Councillor, but obviously the Section 106 for the other 950 houses has been made to, or will be made to the Staffordshire County Council, and they will then have to add additional for these additional houses. So they already have a significant amount of contribution from the Section 106. But my question really was going to be, when is the Section, remind me, can you, when is the Section 106 actually paid? When is that on completion of the details, the reserve matters, or is it paid on the completion of the outline?
Unfortunately, I don't have the details of the original Section 106 to hand, but it's always termed in respect of trigger points, so the payments will always be connected to a certain number of dwellings being built, that a payment is required, either the whole payment or part payment to the County Council. Councillors, does that, sorry?
Well, it does. So what's the trigger point for these payments then?
That will be part of the negotiations of the Section 106. Usually it's something in the order of about 30% of completion of the dwellings on site with the trigger of the payment, but that depends on the instructions that go forward for the Section 106.
Okay, so that actually indicates that the County Council are always working on a part payment going forward to wait for those trigger points to get all of their money for something, for a school or whatever, or the improvements to other schools around.
Yes, the County Council are able to do what's called forward funding, so rely on the promise, in effect, of the money in the Section 106, but obviously that's at their own risk that the development later is either not built out or some other issue arises that means that the trigger point isn't reached. But otherwise, once the trigger point is reached, that liability is live, legally speaking.
So that's then a legal agreement, but it's when the trigger point, the legal agreement kicks in when the trigger point is reached. Is that right? Is that what you're saying?
Well, the legal agreement will be will affect the land and bind the land the instant it's signed and completed. The trigger point is dependent on the terms of the Section 106. So the two are different.
Okay, yeah. Okay, I'm just trying to see how we can actually make sure that this money does turn up and we do get the school and the community centre building. And obviously, as you said earlier, there's no way we can link those two things. So.
Just to come back on that, the primary school that is part of the original SUE outline application, that will be provided regardless of whether either of these two goes ahead. So the primary school and any contribution that was in the original 106 towards senior provision, that will go ahead regardless of whether or not there is an approval on these two and a subsequent Section 106 agreement.
Thank you. Councillor Huckabee, did you want to come in?
Yeah, musings on the situation so far then, Councillor Jones's his contribution. If you take the progress of environmental and climate change concerns, there has been a concern with the extra transport necessary to accommodate what the county council see as the efficiencies by expanding current education facilities rather than building small usable situations. And to parallel that, we've got the main Sainsbury's store, but in each of the communities around Burton, there's a small local Sainsbury's store. That recognises the fact of locality and what's now termed as trying to drive to the 15-minute city, which is to reduce transport between a person's house, home, and the need for groceries, etc. So the problem that I can see in the future is that in this particular area there's going to be a hellishly high increase in travel along the current roads to reach the existing schools if they decide to go that way. Are we up to date on the concept of trying to reduce travel and what have you? You know, when you ask about S106 and you ask about the dedication of the money for education, does it take into account these near future restrictions or impositions that are going to come about because of what we recognise now as a threat to our climate? Or is it that we are still in a process where we need to bring these onto an observable platform? We know about the flooding. Flooding is going to be the highest issue that we have to deal with because of the increased rainfall and the frequency of it. Are we in parallel on other issues which are going to be just as relevant on this?
I think the only way I can respond to that is that the application site, the wider site, is a sustainable urban extension that's approved. It was approved in 2013, and that has associated conditions and a Section 106 agreement with it. So the fact that it's a sustainable, classed as a sustainable urban extension, is a consideration of these applications and that these two sites are within that SUE area.
Could I ask what your definition of sustainable is? Is it 1,000 years, or is it 1,000,000 years, or is it 10 years?
There's a definition in the local plan of a sustainable urban extension, and it's clear that the site was approved as a sustainable urban extension. So your question isn't really relevant to this particular site and the fact that it is an SUE.
Thank you. Do I have any further speakers on this item? Councillor Huckabee, do you want to just knock your mic off, please? Thank you. Thank you. I don't have any further speakers. We've had a comprehensive presentation, a good wide debate. Now we'll move on to a vote for the first application. So we're looking at planning application P20220138. This is for the outline application for up to 90 dwellings with all matters reserved. Do I have anybody indicating to take this forward? Councillor Jones and Councillor Whittaker, would you second that? Yeah, Councillor Whittaker second that. So can we see a show of hands for all those in favour of this application, please? So this application, the vote is unanimous, so this application has been carried forward. So now we'll move on to the second application, which is P20220139. This is for the outline application for up to 100 dwellings with all matters reserved. So again, do I see any indication of anyone wishing to take this forward? Councillor George. Anyone like to second it? Councillor Jones? And can I see a show of hands, all those in favour of this application, please? Thank you. Again, unanimous vote, so this application is carried forward as well. So we'll move on to planning application number 4. So if anybody would like to leave the room now, if you could do, please. Thank you, members. We'll move on to the final application for today. This is planning application P20240063 for the erection of a single-storey side extension and rear extension and erection of a 2-metre-high boundary wall. Site address is 1 Hollyhock Way, Branston, Staffordshire, DE143FE. Just on this application, just to make it clear, we are looking at the application discussed and not the wider site, as might have a second application coming forward for that. Thank you. I'll pass you over to the planning officers.
Okay. So this application, 1 Hollyhock Way in Branston. The proposal, single-storey side extension and rear extension and erection of a 2-metre-high boundary wall. This is a householder application brought to planning committee as the applicant is related to a member of staff, as householders don't normally come to planning committee. I would refer you to the update sheet, which includes a statement from the Branston Parish Council, as they didn't have anybody available to attend committee today, and there's some additional neighbour comments on the update sheet. So, looking at the wider area, the application site is a detached two-storey house that is part of the phase two of the Branston Lees Sustainable Urban Extension development. Sits on the corner of Hollyhock Way and Acacia Lane, with further detached houses surrounding in Hollyhock Way and detached and semi-detached houses within Acacia Lane. At the site visit this morning, members asked about the area of open space and the access to it and the area of space opposite here. The area here, adjacent to, I think it's number 1, Acacia Lane, that is in the ownership of the developer. The public open space actually ends at that line there. This area of land here is also within the ownership of the developer, and it is part of that area that the applicant has purchased and would be subject of the further change of use application that's likely to come forward in November. So it wasn't purchased from ESBC, wasn't in their ownership, it was part of the developer's land. So also, just to clarify, although it's not strictly relevant to this application, members asked this morning about the area of open space. You can see the green area is all POS. That doesn't include that area there, which is in the ownership. Oh, sorry, I should have got the pointer up. Where's the... Can't see it. Sorry, I can't read this with my glasses. Okay, so this area here is outside of the green line, which is the area that the applicant has purchased. So all the green is public open space, and you can see various points where the open space comes into the roadway to provide access for residents into the areas of open space. This is a section from the Land Registry Plan, but as I said, it's not directly relevant to the application for consideration today. So this is just wider context of the application site. The area immediately... Oh, sorry, this isn't working on here. Yeah. Oh, that's better, yeah. This area here is the service yard for the local centre, which was built as part of the SUE and their car park, and this is the local health centre. So just to give you a bit of context from the area. Moving on to some photographs, as you saw this morning, a two-storey detached house with an existing double garage and driveway. Question asked this morning about permitted development rights. The property does not have permitted development rights removed, but consent is required for this extension because it comes closer to the highway than the existing house, i.e. Acacia Lane. So that's why consent is required. Whilst PD rights haven't been removed for this particular property, a number of other plots within the SUE have had permitted development rights removed, both for extensions and some for garage conversions. And we have had other applications for extensions and garage conversions. So just some of the photographs showing the existing boundary fencing that is up to the back of pavement along Acacia Lane. The rear of the house and back garden, and this is the existing shed that sits to the side of the house where the extension would be positioned. This tree is the one that I identified this morning that would be removed to allow for the extension to be built. But all the other trees that you can see with, in these photographs are within the public open space and would be retained, wouldn't be affected by the proposals. So this is the area of land that has been purchased and fenced off that forms the subject of a further application. The area of land in the front of the gates here is not part of the public open space. As mentioned, it's owned by the developer. This view just looks along the public open space. So the extension will sit to the side of the house with a pitch roof to the frontage and a gable to the rear. I was asked this morning about the resultant garden area. The remaining garden area would be 160 square metres. Separation distance and amenity SPD requires 80 square metres for a 5-bed house, so the remaining garden area would be double what is the requirement. 4 parking spaces are shown on the frontage, as well as there is a double garage at the property. So showing the existing and the proposed elevations, so single storey side extension with a window on the front, pitched roof. The application has been amended during the course of the application to significantly reduce the height of the extension and to remove some roof lights from the proposals. So, as you can see from this side elevation, the extension does extend beyond the rear elevation of the house, and beyond the extension they are proposing a 2-metre high brick wall at the back of pavement.
The layout plan, it shows a ground floor, the extension would provide a ground floor bedroom, dressing room and a shower room, and it shows access from the bedroom into the rear garden. This is just some details about the other application. It's noted because a number of the neighbour letters that have been received refer to both applications. So the other application is for this area of land that they've purchased from the developer for change of use of that land to residential garden land, and for a 2 metre high wall to continue along where the current fencing is. The original scheme included a very large, very high outbuilding within this area, which we identified as being unacceptable, and was going to refuse. That has now been withdrawn from the application, and we are reconsulting on the amended plans that just shows this as garden land with no outbuilding included. So it's likely that that will be reported to November committee. Just a note on flood risk. The site sits within flood zone 2, as the remainder of the properties within the SUE. The general guidance and requirements in terms of a householder application are that floor levels are no lower than the existing, and that flood resilience measures are incorporated, and there's a list of those there. These include things like making sure that electric sockets are above a certain height and that sort of thing, and these are standard practice on a householder application. So moving on to the details of the report in terms of consultations, highways have raised no objections. Environmental health have recommended a precautionary condition in terms of contaminated land, which is the same on the remainder of the SUE. Archaeology, given the scale of the proposal and the development history of the site, there's no archaeological issues have been raised. Moving on to publicity, the Branston Parish Council have raised comments on both applications, and it's difficult to interchange them so they're all included. Impact on visibility for drivers, particularly in relation to the nearby corner. Impact on neighbouring properties and right to light. Application setting a precedent for other similar developments in the area. And the application non-compliance with paragraph 4.9 in the SPD, which is about outlook and impact on neighbours. No comments received from any ward members. Four objections received in relation to the original consultation, and a further two on the reconsultation on the application on the amended plans. The comments raised refer to both applications, predominantly about the size of the outbuilding that was being proposed on the additional land. So brick built straight onto the footpath is not in keeping with the estate. Pitch of the roof is too high and be overpowering. That's since been reduced considerably. Parking issues at the property. Concerns that the property may be let as an HMO and that the size of the property is already a large family home. Loss of privacy to the front windows. Building too close to outlook of neighbouring properties, noise and movement disturbance from gates being installed directly onto the pavement. So then two further comments received in relation to the amended plans. Concerns about the size of the building and future use. Noise being created, not in keeping with the house and the estate. Proposed building will cause an ugly sight, is too high and will block light from neighbouring properties. Who owns the piece of land the proposed outbuilding will be sited on, as it appears to be beyond the garden boundary? As I said, most of these relate to the other piece of land and not the extension. The area is becoming extremely noisy without the additional building. Will not be a pleasant view if the building is erected. Comments and concerns from original application still stand, with no changes have been addressed.
looking at policies, it's the MPPF, East Staff's local plan, East Staff's design guide, parking SPD and the Branston neighbourhood plan. Moving on to the principle, development considered to be acceptable in principle being located within the settlement boundary as defined in the local plan. Visual amenity, the proposal is visible from public vantage points. However, the proposed extension, as amended, is considered to be sympathetic to the existing building in terms of the scale, design and materials. And the proposal follows the same line as the existing boundary fencing, so it will not harm the character and appearance of the area. The proposed boundary wall is an existing feature within the street scene and locality, that it will not harm the character and appearance of the area. Heritage assets, there are no significant impacts on heritage assets, i.e. archaeology, given the scale of the proposals. Residential amenity, the development as amended is not considered significantly adversely affect the amenities of the occupiers of neighbouring properties due to the juxtaposition of the proposal and the separation distance in relation to the neighbouring properties. Highway matters, considered to have no adverse impact on highway safety, as adequate parking is being proposed and the Highway Authority have raised no objections. Flood risk, as mentioned, it's in flood zone 2. However, the internal floor levels of the development will be no lower than the dwelling's existing internal floor levels, and flood-proofing measures will be incorporated. Contaminated land. It's in an area known for contaminated land. Whilst the wider development has previously been investigated and remediated for contaminated land, a precautionary condition in relation to this is recommended. Ecology, in particular great crested newts. The application site sits within an amber impact zone for great crested newts, and therefore it's appropriate to include a standard informative to remind the applicant of their responsibilities. To biodiversity net gain, the site is exempt due to the size of the development. So, conclusions, proposal complies the local plan, Branston neighbourhood plan, parking standards, SPD, the East Staff's design guide and the NPPF. We've negotiated with the applicant throughout the course of the application to secure a satisfactory outcome. The recommendation is approved with conditions as per the report and the details in the update sheet. Thank you.
Thank you. Do we have an indication of any member wishing to speak on this item? Councillor Slater.
Thank you, Chair. I can't see why we should object to this application particularly. I'm sorry that we have to accept the loss of the beech tree. Can we have an informative that says that in view of the worsening state of climate change and the subsequent loss of biodiversity, the applicant could be advised that it would be a good idea to plant another tree, or at least one of a tree similar to the one being lost? Can that be something like that? Can we do that? Is that too wordy?
Sorry, I was just checking with legal as to whether it would be appropriate as a condition or as an informative, and we think an informative would be appropriate given the size of the development, the fact that it's a householder application. But by all means, yes, an informative regarding a replacement tree.
At least one, yes. Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Thank you. That informative noted. And Councillor Huckabee, did you wish to speak?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. But it's not just a beech tree, is it? If I go onto Google Maps and look at the situation that existed some time ago, we see that a mature tree, I can't identify its particular species, was removed to enable the acquisition of that land and the installation of two big double gates at the end of the new garden. I'm just wondering what protection would have been afforded to that tree in the sale of the land from one particular property owner to another. I'm concerned with this in general across the area because I think tree existence now has become a crucial element in all our endeavours, whether on a planning committee or an environment committee
or whatever. It's not shown on your maps, by the way. Where it lies is against the fence that's the red line from the beech tree that's been demolished to the edge of the road. It stood there. And you can see it if you go onto Google Maps, number 3, Acacia Lane, Branston, England. I mean, if there is no protection for them, that's the way it stands at
the
moment.
That's exactly the situation. Those trees were not protected with a tree protection order, and they are not within a conservation area, therefore they have no protection. So any tree within that garden area could be removed without the requirement of any consent. The land has been sold, I believe, already completed because they've fenced it off. But that was between the developer of the site and the applicant. The council were not involved in that. The trees that remain and those that are shown on there are within the public open space, so they are the responsibility of the borough council.
Right. So, technical point, I guess. One comes before the other and beats the deadline. We were educated a while ago about the biodiversity gain that must be part of planning applications. This application has no biodiversity gain, and in actual fact, if we look back a few weeks, we'll find out that there was actually a deficit caused by the destruction of this tree.
I'm not quite sure whether that's a question or a statement, but biodiversity and net gain, householders are exempt from biodiversity net gain. As this is a householder application, there is no requirement.
Okay.
Thank you. Could I ask you both to turn your mics off for me? Thank you. Councillor Legg, did you wish to come in?
Thank you, Chair. I'd like to ask, and sorry that I didn't ask it this morning, how big is the extension going to be and how close is it to the pavement? I know there was the fence there. What sort of gap is there the other side of the fence, please?
It is angled along the boundary, so it will follow the existing fence line up to the back of pavement.
Next question. Can I ask how tall it will be, please, with it being on the side of the house?
The height has been reduced through the course of the application, and the report identifies that maximum height of 3.8 metres.
Can you check that again? Because I was led to believe it could be no more than 3 metres.
That's if, in terms of permitted development, there is height restrictions on householder extensions. But in terms of an application that is made to us, we can consider the height that is put forward. It has been significantly reduced in height since it was first submitted. I can't remember the measurement of how much it's been reduced, but quite a significant amount. It was a lot larger when it first came in.
Did you want to come in again?
Yeah.
I still think that it's too tall. I think it would be better at the 3 metres, because I think if anybody else was looking to put a side extension on their house, we're opening the floodgate for not adhering to policy.
There isn't a policy that relates to 3 metres. You wouldn't get a pitched roof in at 3 metres in height. And we wouldn't want to see a flat roof in that location.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. Do we have any further speakers?
No, thank you. So we've listened to the presentation. We've had a debate on the item. Now, moving forward to a recommendation, do I have anybody wishing to take this application forward? Councillor Jones.
Yes, Chair. Can we move the recommendation as per the officer's report? We grant permission subject to the conditions along with the advisory submitted by Councillor Slater.
Thank you. So based on that, do I have a seconder? Councillor Jones, Councillor Whittaker. Moving forward to a vote, all those in favour? Thank you. So that's unanimous. Applications carried forward for approval, subject to the informative as mentioned. Thank you. Moving to agenda item number 7. Could I request members to consider the appeals received and determined? Noted. Thank you. Moving to agenda item number 8. Request members to consider the planning permission circulated with the agenda. Noted. Thank you. Moving to agenda item number 9, it would be. So could I request members of the... we will now move into the private part of the meeting. So could I request that the press and public leave the room by reading... that in accordance with section 100A4 of the Local Government Act 1972, the press and public be excluded from the remainder of the meeting as it is likely in view of the nature of the business to be transacted or the nature of the proceedings that there would be disclosed exempt information as defined in paragraphs of Part 1 of Schedule 12A of the Act indicated in brackets before each item number on the agenda. So could I have somebody to take that forward, please? Councillor Whittaker, any seconder? Councillor Bullock. Can I, all those in favour, please? That's unanimous.